Hey everyone, welcome to the Operation Dichotomy podcast, where our mission is to bridge the gap between you and me by embracing a culture of listening. As usual, today I'm joined by my co-host Jedediah Kim. How are you, sir?
Yo, I'm good. What's up, everyone? Good to be with you, Paul, and with Operation Dichotomy as always. And this is an exciting conversation that we're about to get to because technically we're still in the middle of the election, as some could say and believe. But we had a pre-election conversation, and this is our somewhat post-election conversation.
Yeah, let's call this the first post-election conversation, because I have a feeling that as this process goes forward, at least until Inauguration Day, I think we're going to have at least one or two or 10 more conversations like this, depending on how our country responds. And I don't know, there's just a lot to talk about, I think, in response to this. We usually record our podcasts not so close to the release on Tuesday, but we wanted to delay this one, especially because we wanted to be as up to date as possible. Today, right now, is November 8th, Sunday evening. I say that so you don't judge us and think, hey, they're procrastinating. Like, we do this on purpose so we can have the most up to date information as possible. We want to talk about what happened since Tuesday. You know, we called it Election Day. In reality, it's Election Week. Or election months, because the process that goes forward from now is pretty extensive and it's going to be potentially very long. But I think let's start here, JD. Let's talk about some of the reactions that we've seen. What are some of the things that you've seen from people since Tuesday and even before Tuesday? But I guess specifically as, I don't know if you're following the news and all the constant updates and all the way to, when was it, Friday? When was the president-elect kind of assumed by the media? Was it Friday?
Saturday, I believe.
Saturday? It was yesterday? Oh, yeah, it was yesterday morning, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, Saturday morning. Yeah, man, what are some of the observations that you saw from people? What were their responses? What'd you think about it? And let's go from there.
Yeah, I mean, so I'll speak first of all about the responses that I think were most visible. And if anyone was paying attention to any news outlets, many of them were covering just the sense of celebration and joy and relief that people felt. I mean, honestly, I had a friend of mine who's a major Star Wars fan, and he was like, this feels like the end of the Return of the Jedi. Wow. like the Ewoks are celebrating, like everyone's out in the streets going crazy. And it was really wild actually to see that, you know, that there was people out there. And now, you know, they weren't wearing masks, they weren't socially distanced, you know, understandably we should be doing that even in the middle of celebration. That doesn't change the fact that we're in a pandemic. But the amount of celebration, you know, I saw clips of like parades of cars honking their horns and people dancing in the streets and people dancing in the UPS trucks and the, you know, USPS trucks. And it was just really interesting to see the response of people. And, you know, there were many celebrities who, you know, shared their responses and reactions, but there were a few that really were very striking. I saw one by Van Jones. I mean, I think he's a celebrity. Obviously, he's a newscaster, but mm-hmm. He had this very emotional breakdown. It was really beautiful as he was talking about how it's easier to be a parent, how it's easier to tell your kid that character matters because of what happened today. And you know, there were many other people who had reactions, even when I think about myself. I mean, I'm not really a political person. And I don't get tied up into things, but, and this might be revealing too much about how I voted, I guess, but I was so moved, you know, especially as I thought about what this meant for my daughter. My daughter's an Asian American. I have two girls, and watching what happened historically with Kamala Harris and the three ceilings that she broke.
Was right? It only three?
Being a woman, right? Being mm-hmm. a Black woman and being a South Asian woman mm-hmm. To occupy that office, first time in our nation's history. I mean, it's so significant. You know, to where all these little girls across the country, you know, can be like, wow, like there's someone who looks like us. I saw that reaction. Russell Wilson's wife, Sierra, had a clip of her sitting there with her daughter and saying, look, there's vice president. She looks like us. She's one of us. I think that was kind of the words and sentiment she was saying. So that's the kind of responses I saw. I saw a really hilarious response. Jennifer Lawrence is in Boston right now. And she like ran out to the streets in her pajamas and was just running around celebrating with a mask on. Mm-hmm. Everyone thought it was just another crazy person in Boston. I love Boston. I lived there for over 10 years.
And let's be real.
Hey, let's be real. You know, Paul.
I've been there.
But J-Lo was, she was celebrating. So there was a lot of that, you know. I think for a lot of people, it was a sense that, you know, the turning of the tide, you know, a moment, a historic moment, the ceilings being broken, relief, celebration, joy. And then at the same moment, literally, a sense that, like, we have work to do. You know, our country is still so divided. 75 million votes for and 70 million for the other, you know? Mm-hmm. We're so split, so many levels. And so they felt like it was the beginning of something and the end of something at the same time. That's kind of the responses I saw. What did you see?
I saw a lot of that, everything that you just said. But I think, again, I'm fortunate enough to be able to see a lot of the other side too, just because of, we talked about this before, how I have kind of a broad spectrum of random people. And I'll talk about the other side more so just because I don't want to repeat everything you just said. But obviously, it looks like, for all intents and purposes, the president-elect is Joe Biden. And Trump most likely has lost this election. And I say that particular way, one, because, you know, it still does have to be confirmed. But the other thing is, I have no idea who's listening to this podcast and where you are on the political spectrum. But I feel like a more extreme perspective is that he's going to come back and win somehow, whether it's with recounts or they're going to overturn decisions because of voter fraud, and they're gonna, I don't, like, all that stuff, right? I think everybody kind of knows the details because Trump's been tweeting about it. And you know what? Like, honestly, maybe there is a chance that that could happen. And I'm not gonna be the one to say it's impossible, because we know in this world nothing is impossible, no matter what the slim chances are. And I feel like that's far, far right for the most part, even like middle right. But then I feel like as you get to the more middle right, they're like, I think a lot of them are still kind of, and again, I generalize, but the people that I've seen, the one of the most kind of rational middle right responses that I saw was this guy. He's an entrepreneur named Aaron Wagner. He's actually from Canada, which is interesting, but he came here and he's a citizen. I think he's a citizen. But anyways, he was saying how it's pretty apparent that both sides, there's some weird stuff is politics, right? Weird stuff happens. And because it's politics, and because it's hard to say that both sides, because it's politics, acted in complete honesty, there's a chance that there could be voter fraud. There could be errors, which is why this whole process exists from now until January. And so, you know, people, everybody has a right to their response, whether it be joy or anger or whatever. But as quote unquote rational people, let's take a step back and understand that there could be a mistake, and just hold on and kind of let's wait a little bit to confirm what's going on. And it's not placing blame on either side, but either side would be left or right. It's just, this is how the system is. People make errors, and sometimes errors just happen. And then you pointed back to the whole the Al Gore Bush election where it went back and forth like 13 times before finally Bush was president. And then
to which I would say, though, to be clear, you know, I think that it was different, you know, considering the circumstances and the evidence that was there.
Well, right? The evidence that wasn't there
was, I mean, but I actually think that, like, they saw some things and it created a complaint rather than having a complaint and then going looking for things. Now, we don't know.
In the past or now?
In the past. In the past. Right. The Al Gore situation.
So I think, I'm just going to jump in because it continues what you're saying. Regardless of what people think about President Trump, I feel like, I don't even know why I'm saying this. I'm pretty sure everybody agrees. If he could just act quietly instead of spewing everything online first, the perspective of how people view him and everything that's going on would be completely different. Mitt Romney actually had a great quote. He was like, it's well within your rights to ask for a recount and do all the legal things if you expect something is wrong. But there's no reason we have to come out into the public like this with accusations and no evidence. Like, this is, come on.
100% agree. And I 100% agree. And it doesn't help us as a nation. It really doesn't.
That's the thing. And so that's kind of been his story for the 4 years. And I think that's why most people that I know most people I know just don't like him. Whether they agree with his policies and voted for him or not, they just don't like him as a person. And that's why, right? And then the last group of responses that I saw of the right side, which was more close to the middle, was like, well, it looks like, quote unquote, we lost. But you know what? We are one country. And I see why people voted for President-elect Biden. I don't know, all these terms get confused, but why you voted for Biden. And so let's unite together as one country now and just do what's right for America. And I feel like it goes all the way down the spectrum from the moderate left to the radical far left, right? And so it's just interesting for me to be able to see all these different responses and to kind of see like, man, there's so many different kinds of people, so many different responses. So that also makes me wonder moving forward, like, what are these different types of people going to do? Like, how many people are actually going to unite? Are people going to fight about it? It's going to be an interesting 2-3 months, man.
Yeah, I think to your point, Paul, that there's enough people, even on the left, on that spectrum as well, who are moderate enough to know and say, okay, we won, but that doesn't mean we can just move forward and have it our way.
Right.
Because we're divided as a country. We have a lot of work to do. And like I've said before on this podcast, you know, the votes that represent the 70 million, their voices, their stories, their lives, their reasons why they voted that way. And it goes beyond just, oh, they're racist or they're horrible people. Like, some of them might be, sure, but a lot of them voted because they have needs and pains and hurts, and they have stories and narratives that need to be heard and seen and recognized. And the truth is, you know, we need to get past our differences and we need to figure out a way to move forward together. And I actually think it's going to take the group you're talking about and the group that also exists on the other side to be able to acknowledge what it is to move forward together. They're going to have to imagine that and reimagine that. And Joe Biden, I mean, I think, you know, in his first speech that he gave, that was totally the tone, at least of how I heard it, of how he's trying to position himself, right? He wants to be a president for all Americans, he says, not just for those who vote for me, but also for those who didn't vote for me. And now some people could be like, oh, he's just being a politician. That's just all small talk. I mean, here's the bottom line. We know that at the end of the day, no president is going to save the United States of America.
You said we know, right? But let's reemphasize that, right? Because you know, I know, but let's, I mean, of course, our listeners know, right? But for everyone's sake, can you just say that again, man? Because I feel like this has to be emphasized. It's not going to be Biden. It's not going to be Trump. It's not going to be Kamala Harris. It's not going to be anybody in office, right? It's going to be you. It's going to be me. Continue. Sorry.
So, I mean, like, you know, I remember when Barack Obama won.
Uh-huh.
What was that, 2008? 2008 was the first time he won, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And yes, we can, right, was the slogan that was going across the country. And I remember when he won, when he gave his first speech, about the sense of hope and relief that people felt, like, change is here, change has come. First Black president in our history, what an incredible moment. And he walked into a very divided government. And I know a lot of people who, across those 8 years, they were seriously let down because they thought that he was going to be the one to come and fix everything.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, we know it, not we know without a doubt that no one person, man or woman, no matter how great they are, one president, one position is not going to solve all the problems of our country. It's going to take the hundreds, thousands, millions, tens of millions, et cetera, number of acts from everyday normal Americans to fix this divide and help us heal and move forward together. It's going to take us going beyond our own selfish interests and centering ourselves, learning how to acknowledge and listen to the experiences and narrative of others, and having a common narrative, a common identity as Americans. It's going to take us really to rediscover our soul again. I absolutely believe that as a country. That's not going to come from Washington. It's going to come from those everyday decisions that we face and the ways that we treat each other and care for each other and look out for each other. That's what's going to bring change.
Yeah, I really like what Joe Biden said. Just to reiterate what you said, he doesn't want to be a president for just one side. It's going to be for all the Americans. And regardless of whether he meant it or not, whether it was political or not, doesn't matter, because that's the attitude that we need to have. And it also kind of reminded me, going back to the debate between Pence and Kamala Harris, where I really liked Mike Pence's answer to that last question from that kid. Like, all I see is Democrats and Republicans fighting. Like, why is our country so divided? And then his response, again, this may have been just a political thing, but he pretty much said, after this debate's done and the fight is done, somebody's elected president, we're going to get off the stage, shake hands, and say, hey, let's do this for our country together. That's what we got to do, right? When the race is on, we think that one candidate is better for, well, realistically, we think the one candidate is better for me. Let's just how we vote. Or maybe a larger group of people that I'm a part of. That's what we want them to be in office. But when somebody wins, regardless of who you voted for, they're now representing you. You are entrusting them to lead you and lead the country into wherever we want them to go. But if we can't come together as a people, and if we spend the next 4 years whining and crying about, oh, you know, the election was stolen. Okay, I shouldn't say that yet, because I don't know, right? Let's not make any conclusive evidence. Conclusions right now, because assumptions are bad, right?
There's a reason why those legal cases haven't been working so far. So anyways, but yes.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. We'll leave that all in there. But regardless, if we can't come together as one nation under God, one nation under one freaking president, then there's no reason why we should be the United States of America. Right, we might as well be two different countries, red and blue. We're pretty much divided equally numbers according to the vote, but that's not what we're about. And I think somewhere we've forgotten that the diversity is what makes us great. The differences are what makes us great. I was talking to my friend, that same friend I always talk about. I talk to this guy a lot, but he lived in Singapore for two or three years because of work. And he was just comparing, like, man, in Singapore, everybody is almost brainwashed to think the same way. And in some ways it's efficient because everybody does the same thing, you know, where this whole country is going. But the problem is you don't get the differences of opinion that basically force people to grow. Like, if I disagree with you, JD, and we're talking about abortion, we're talking about all these crazy things, I never learned to hear your perspective, then we can't come together to see how my view and your view can come and complement each other, add to each other, and then create this great thing, which in our case happens to be the United States of America. But if we can't get past these, I don't even want to call it divisions, right? It's differences in diversity, but they shouldn't cause division. They should cause a stronger unity with bigger perspective. But if we can't listen to each other, like you said, if we can't validate each individual and their experiences as legitimate, valid experiences, then we're in trouble. And I mean, it looks like we said yesterday, right? Now we really need to get to work, because I don't know what's going to happen in a couple of months. But regardless, we need to come together as a people, different, but people, same people working towards the same goal. Listen to each other, empathize with each other, contribute to the society, and just move forward.
Yeah, you know, I love all that. And when I think about it, the question that comes in my mind, right, is when we say, like, we forgot, we need to remember. Mm. And I honestly, and maybe this is a little strong to say, but I'm going to say it because I think it's important to recognize. I don't know if I could 100% say that we have truly embraced the diversity and the difference of the other as a beautiful thing, as a gift and not as a threat. And the reason why I say that is if you look at American history, mm-hmm. I mean, you can talk about the Black narrative and the history of races in America and how the difference of color between white and Black and was not celebrated as a gift, but was seen as a threat, kind of like created this distortion, right? Yet that's when we were saying we were the United States of America, right? When the Declaration of Independence was written, and we were talking about that we all have certain unalienable rights that didn't apply to the Black slaves that weren't seen as people. But if you go even further, right, back to how America started, and you talk about colonists and how they saw the indigenous Native American people who were here as savages, as uncouth, uncivilized people who needed to be reformed and saved from their savagery. Mm. Like, that diversity was not seen as a gift, it was seen as a threat. And it's upon those foundations that hate and fear and division has perpetuated over generation to generation to generation. I actually think that we may have a chance, like in this generation, to do something truly historic, which is to live more deeply and maybe for the first time ever, more truly into the words that we declare in our declaration, in our constitution, to honor the worth and value and right of every American and every person who comes to this country with a dream of being an American. I think that we actually have an opportunity to maybe do something that's never been done before. And it's gonna take compromise and sacrifice and the willingness to see each other, not as a threat, but as a gift. And honestly, that's the challenge before us. 75 million to 70 million. I mean, honestly, we need to be able to look across the other line and say, okay, I have no idea why this person does this, why this person thinks this, but they're still a human being. And the issues that are facing them and me, like the issues of racism or climate change, you know, or any of the issues that we face as a country, those issues affect all of us. And the fighting amongst each other isn't going to help us solve those issues.
Yeah,
it won't. It's just going to make things worse and literally make American life a living hell. And so hopefully we can choose a better narrative and we can try something else and move forward together.
Yeah, no, I take that back. We didn't forget. I don't think we ever knew. So we have to create that. And the fun part is that we can create something new. The scary part is that we don't know the hell that's going to look like. And we have an idea of what we want it to look like, but because it's never been done, it's not like we're going back to it, right? I was just thinking as you were saying all that, what would have happened if when this land was colonized by the Europeans, if instead of just demolishing the Native Americans, imagine sitting over a fire dinner and just learning, right? Learning to... I mean, this may be completely stereotypical because I honestly don't know too much about Native Americans beyond, you know, like watching Pocahontas on Disney Channel. And but like,
so bad.
I know. Call me uncultured, and I'm willing to learn. So if you find it ignorant, this is why we had the show. But like, I just imagine like think about Avatar, the movie Avatar. Because that's basically the same, not the same, but it tries to recreate that sort of incident, right?
Yep.
Imagine if human beings, or let's again go back to this, Europeans came to this land and just learned about the land, learned about how to take care of it and how to exist within it while they kept their quote unquote Western knowledge, which is ironic. I guess it was Eastern knowledge at the time, Eastern culture. And like, that blend of two positives turning into this ultimate thing instead of just, oh, I'm better than you, so goodbye, have a nice death, you know? But I think, like you said, we now have this chance. Like, we're not going to eliminate the other party from existence, but we can learn from each other. We can hear from each other. And if I'm completely honest, I was thinking again about what you were saying. It's almost like there's two parts, right? Well, we have to be able to listen to the other side, but then we also have to help the other side listen to us and hear us, because it really does have to go both ways. And there's so much that goes into the practical aspect of that that we don't really have time to talk about today. We could talk about moving forward.
Definitely.
But I think the challenge that's presented in that scenario is that I feel like the moderate left and the moderate right, they're kind of already there. The reason why they're moderate is because they see both sides. I'm like, man, I see that side, but I also see my side. But I value this stuff a little bit more, which is why I'm going to vote there. And I think we've practiced that enough in our short life that we've kind of ended up in that middle, let's call it the middle of the curve. I think it is a bell curve. And I think a lot of us are there. But how do we connect with those that are less moderate, or a little bit more extreme, the ones that are more stubborn in their values, but also a little bit less rational? They're generally not very good at listening.
Yeah, see, here's how it works, right? And this might be very crude and frank and honest, but I think it's true. You don't need 100% to move forward. You really don't. And I actually think that any significant change in an institution or an organization, you're not going to get 100% to come with you. You know, you might get that 16 to 20%. That's like that early adopters. And then there's like that middle, right? And those early adopters help to bring buy-in. And so that middle pocket you're talking about might be the early adopters that bring buy-in to a larger group. But then there's that last 15 to 20%, and they will either come with it over the course of time, mm-hmm. or they will splinter off and not come with it. And yeah. That, unfortunately, is the price of progress. Not everyone gets to come as we move forward, because they just don't. We've seen that in every moment of our history. You know, I just want to say two more things. I know for sake of time and stuff, we could talk forever, but there are two things that came up that I think are important to note in light of all you said. One is that we've already had one civil war. We've already seen what it is when we take up arms against each other, and all the death that the civil war brought. It's just believable when you read those accounts, you know, when you walk in those places, right, where those battles were fought. And Those were American, you know, sons and fathers and grandfathers and, you know, children and daughters and mothers, right? That all on the same line, you know, all over this issue, willing to kill each other. I don't think we can afford to do it again. It's the first thing I want to say. And the second thing I want to say is, what would it look like, right, if there would have been this combination, this conglomeration of cultures? It actually reminds me of my first trip to Hawaii. So I remember Hawaii, and I was like, oh, I want to go get some Hawaiian food. So we looked up Hawaiian restaurant, and we went to this Hawaiian restaurant and opened up the menu. And all of a sudden, I'm like, wait a second. There's like a Korean dish on this menu and a Chinese dish on this menu. There's Japanese dish on this menu. Like, what is this, right? And as I started to look into the history of Hawaiian food, now I'm not talking about like luau food. I mean, that is a certain kind of food, right? That's native and true of Hawaii and the culture there and the people who were there, right? You know, but I'm talking about like what progressed as Hawaii grew. I found that there was a story, right, that as people were working on the farms and as they were working, that what they would do during lunchtime, you know, in a spirit of Hawaii ohana and Hawaii aloha, right, this whole culture that they have, that they would share their meals. Like the Koreans would bring something, you know, Chinese, you know, they would all bring their food. And rather than just eating their own meal, they would share the food with each other. So you had like a plate that was a little bit of all these different things. And what has happened over a period of time now is that when you go into a Hawaiian restaurant, why do you eat Hawaiian food? You're going to find a Korean dish and a Chinese dish and a Japanese dish, because that all represents Hawaiian food culture. Mm. And I think like we're not quite there yet, right? Because in America, we say it's a melting pot or it's a salad bowl. And in the Hawaiian food culture thing, it's both. The Korean food is still Korean food, but it's actually now Hawaiian food because it has a broader identity than it just being by itself. And so these are kind of the dynamics that I think we have to think about, right? That we don't have to like fully lose our own uniqueness in the midst of assimilation, but we also don't have to be such separate individual parts that we can't have any kind of a shared collective identity.
Hmm. That's a dichotomy if I ever saw one.
That's a dichotomy.
When you're talking about Hawaiian food, this is very kind of random. We went to McDonald's and I remember eating breakfast at McDonald's in Hawaii and they had pineapple with it. I'm like, man, that's, first of all, so good because Hawaiian pineapple. But even that little thing, it's, forget about it. I'm not going to elaborate on that. What I'm about to say now is a little more important. So let me just focus this before we start wrapping up. I think going back to what I said about the bell curve, and from what I understand, and I'm not the expert here with the statistics, but I heard this enough where I've heard and experienced this enough where I know this to be relatively true, is that most Americans are in that middle, right? Some might be a little bit more middle than others, but most are not in that extreme part. But the problem that we face in our culture right now, and I think especially during this election season, because media loves this stuff and social media loves this stuff, it's all about shares and attention. The extreme 1, 2, 5, however many percent, that's the voices you hear all the time because they're loud and they're annoying and it gets attention, right? It riles up conversations. And what happens though is that we, if you're on the other side, begin to think of the, you know, if you're on the right, you think the left is that extreme 1% that's just doing all this crazy stuff, saying all these crazy irrational things. Like, shoot, all Democrats are this way. And then vice versa, right? You look at all the crazy quote unquote right stuff is, man, they're so freaking fundamental and blah, 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 blah. Like, no, but it's not necessarily like that. That's not representative of our population at all. But not at because all. It's so loud, that's what creates division in our minds. And so what I think we have to do as more moderate people, which is kind of ironic because I feel like we're more moderate because we listen better, is we need to speak up more, right? You need to be the voice that speaks your opinion, but I would argue that oftentimes you have to speak up when you are the dissenting opinion. And what I mean by that is if, you know, I don't think it's a secret right now that I'm more right and you're a little bit more left, right? So if I'm with, you know what, let's be more specific. You have to be the dissenting opinion within your own group of people, right? So if I'm a little bit more conservative with my quote unquote conservative friends who may be a little bit more conservative than I am, if they said something stupid about the left side, about those liberals, and I know that it's one incorrect, it's a broad assumption that's probably not true about the majority of that people, I need to be the one to speak up. Because if you ever watch the news, you know what makes the biggest impact? It's when the conservatives are speaking up for the liberals on their behalf, right? And the flip side, when a Democrat is like, dude, you Democrats over here, I mean, we're kind of on the same side here, but what you're saying about the right side, that's a little bit harsh, right? If a right person defends a right, it doesn't mean anything. Same thing with the left. But if you're defending the other perspective because you know that perspective, you have to speak up. And it's hard, right? It's uncomfortable. You're going to have a little bit of friction. And it sucks, right? If you're not used to it, it's difficult and it sucks and it's going to be hard. But the reality is, unless we're able to do that, the perspective that this world holds of what our culture is and what the opposite sides are, it's going to be that corner 1%. We're going to see liberals as the ones that's burning down everything because the world is doing stuff they don't like. We're going to see the conservative side as people who just want to dominate and control everything without giving any people freedom and enslave the world when it's not like that. But it's not their fault. It's our fault for not speaking up. So as much as we say, listen, 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 sometimes you got to speak up.
Yeah, man, I 100% agree with that. And if I like what I kept hearing in my mind as you were saying that, is that in order to recapture the truth of the American story and the American soul, like the ones in the middle who know that the loudest voices are not true have to start telling our truth.
Yes, sir.
And our truth, we've said it before here, it's the reason why you and I are here talking the way we do and respecting each other and listening to each other. There is more that unites us than divides us. There's more that we have in common than that's different. And when we can get to that point of actually acknowledging that, and that's the voice that becomes the loudest voice in the room, we may have a chance of moving forward together.
Mm. We'll call that your words of wisdom for the day. So guys, as we wrap up today, we are really wrapping up now, not just saying that. Let's make that our mission moving forward, right? Whatever happens in this election, even though most of it's already happened, let's remember that we are together, right? There's more that unites us than divides us, like JD just said. And if I were to add anything practical, was just that last part. Like be the voice of reason within your group if there isn't one. Because somebody has to be it. And if you're listening to this podcast by now, you probably are that voice of reason. So learn to use it. That's it for today. As usual, connect with us at operation.comedy.com. We are at Operation Dichotomy on Instagram. JD and my info will be there as well. As usual, we're always open to feedback and good conversation. I don't think we said anything too incorrect today, but if you're fact checking us, go ahead. Let us know. We're pretty humble. Anything else I'm missing?
Yeah, we have awesome gear. We're an apparel company. We love the stuff that we have. Not only does it look good, but it's like so comfortable. And so you really should check it out. Seriously.
Yeah, you you really should. You really should. You should be seeing the reviews as well. They're all unpaid, so it's all for real. But that's enough soliciting for today, I guess. All right, everyone. Thanks again for tuning in as usual. Until next time. You and I.